from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up is a rollback coming. In their districts this week, GOP lawmakers are getting a message from their constituents. They are not happy over the massive omnibus spending bill. In fact, I'm told by sources there are serious conversations being held between the president and GOP lawmakers about rolling back portions of the $1.3 trillion measure. Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson is here to discuss that and also how parents and others in Northwest Louisiana are standing for the religious liberties of students. And the Attorney General of Texas is leading a coalition of state attorneys general encouraging the Department of Health and Human Services to rescind Obama-era rules that trample upon the principles of federalism, religious freedom, and rights of conscience. Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas will be here later on Washington Watch. Also, you can make a difference. I hope you understand that. In fact, those of you in Louisiana who responded to my program yesterday helped defeat the Planned Parenthood ACLU Pat Smith sex education bill today in the Louisiana Education Committee. Now, I know we usually don't get too involved in state issues, only from time to time, but this was one that's popping up across the country. These bills and policies are everywhere, and they're coming from the Planned Parenthood and the ACLU. But here's the good news. Here's the good news. Parents are not taking this sitting down. In fact, they are organizing a sex ed sit-out for students April 23rd. The activist mommy, Elizabeth Johnston, will join us with details later on Washington Watch. You won't want to miss that. TonyPerkins.com is the website. If you miss anything on your way home, it's all archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. All right, facing pressure from conservatives, President Trump and congressional Republicans are considering some votes that would cut billions of dollars in spending from the bipartisan funding deal they passed just last month, a budget that continues to increase the national deficit. With us now, Congressman Mike Johnson. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee. He's a member of the Freedom Caucus and one who voted against the omnibus spending bill. Congressman Johnson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be with you, as always.
I know you're in the district like many members are this week, having meetings and visiting different places. What are you hearing from your constituents about the omnibus spending bill that Congress passed before y'all left town?
Well, I'll tell you, I am being universally congratulated for voting against that monstrosity. And everyone seems to understand the reasons why it was such bad policy. I mean, not only the policy itself, but, of course, the procedure. You know, it's now famously known that we were given the bill for the first time at 7:59 p.m. on a Wednesday, expected to vote on it the next day at noon, and it was 2,232 pages long. So it was literally impossible for us to even finish a review of the bill before we voted on it. And on that ground alone, we shouldn't have been doing that. I mean, it's exactly what Pelosi and company did with Obamacare. Remember, we'll pass
exactly
the bill and see what's in it. And we promised to do something different. And when the American people gave the Republicans and conservatives control of both houses of Congress and the White House, they expect us to run our business differently. And we didn't this time. And it was a tremendous failure.
Now, I know that the Freedom Caucus weighed in with the president, and the president was entertaining vetoing the bill when it first landed on his desk. But he ended up signing it, saying it was a national security issue. What are you hearing about the president having second thoughts about going back and carving out some of the spending in this bill?
Listen, I think he's right to second guess this. And I said that to the White House liaison who called me a couple of hours before the vote last week. And I told him that I'm just convinced the president is going to regret this if he signs the bill. I told him why we couldn't support it, some of the horrible things that were in it. You know, it didn't do anything really for border security. It didn't do anything to address sanctuary cities. It maintains the funding for Planned Parenthood and keeps Obamacare completely intact. I mean, all these things are the exact opposite policy positions that the president has been espousing since the campaign trail, and all of us as well. And so I think he's right to have these second thoughts about it. And if there is a mechanism for us to scale back some of this completely irresponsible domestic spending increase that's in this bill, we certainly need to do it. And so we're encouraging the president to give that some very careful thought, and I hope conservatives in the Congress will do the same.
Well, I would. I know that I'm hearing, and I'm sure you're hearing the same thing, especially given the fact that the Republicans have made a big deal about this, and that is the nearly $500 million in funding that flows to Planned Parenthood, that Planned Parenthood was once again funded by the federal government. I would hope that that's one of the funding streams that's on the chopping block.
We certainly hope so. It's been a commitment to, by everyone who even claims the label of conservative in the Congress. And I do genuinely believe that the Republican conference across the board is fairly well united on that issue. I think that some of it, to the extent that it's in the omnibus bill, I think it was snuck in. You know, the part of the problem here is the procedure. We've got Chuck Schumer and a handful of Democrats in the United States Senate that are effectively holding the country hostage because of the 60-vote threshold. And that's why many of us are calling upon the leadership in the Senate and the White House to change that rule. There's nothing sacred about it at all. It doesn't date to the 1790s. It's more like the 1970s, the cloture of filibuster rules, the requirement of a 60-vote threshold. And we need to get back to majority vote. If we don't, then I fear that Chuck Schumer and the minority will continue to drive the train, so to speak, and it's a great outrage, and it should be to the American people.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana represents the northwest portion of Louisiana, discussing the omnibus spending bill that Congress passed before leaving town prior to the resurrection break. $1.3 trillion. It grew in the process, many claiming the process was, it was contrary to what Republicans said they would conduct business by, giving legislators, congressmen, senators very little time to read the bill. What would be the process, Mike, by which the president would reconsider this?
Well, there's been some discussion today about a rather archaic provision in the law, the 1974 Impoundment Act, and effectively what it would do is it would allow the president to reverse certain funding approvals in an omnibus bill like this. But then it would have to be approved within, I think, 45 days by a majority vote of the Congress. So he couldn't do it alone. He would have to have the assistance of at least a majority of us, and I think that he would. I mean, if he went after some of these provisions that you and I are so disgusted by and the American people are concerned about, I think there would be a groundswell of political support to do that. And we should. You know, a lot of people justify their vote on this by saying, well, we needed to increase the spending for the Department of Defense. And look, you know me, Tony. We've known each other a long time. I'm like you. We support the Department of Defense. I mean, I'm a defense hawk. I have two major military installations in my congressional district. But but I also, we've got to remind everyone that every time the Joint Chiefs of Staff and any of the top military brass in this country come before the Congress, and they're under oath, and they're asked the question, what is the most important, the most pressing national security concern or threat to this country? Every one of them say the debt. And so by doing this deficit spending and, you know, $1.3 trillion, we're actually exacerbating the problem. We all need to fund the Department of Defense adequately, but let's remember the House did that last fall. We passed 12 separate appropriations bills. One of them, of course, dealt with national defense. We met all their requirements. We dramatically increased funding. The House did its job. We sent it to the Senate, and once again, it was stalled. They literally did nothing with it. That's why the omnibus became necessary. And again, that's why the real I genuinely believe the real blame for this falls at the feet of Senator Schumer and the Democrats in the Senate, because they're the ones holding it up.
So, Congressman Johnson, if the president were to employ this, as you called, archaic tactic that hasn't been used, goes back to the 70s, if this is used, would this be able to circumvent the 60-vote threshold in the Senate, or would he still be hamstrung by that?
Well, that's the big question. That's what everyone's debating this afternoon. Some would say it's a bare majority vote that is required in both houses. I have not. I've been on the road all day doing events in my district. We're all back doing district work weeks right now, and I haven't had a chance to sit down and research it myself. So I have the same question that you just asked this afternoon, Tony. I certainly hope that, that some of those that are suggesting it's a bare majority, I certainly hope they're right, because if that's true, we'll need to demand that action, and hopefully we'll be successful.
Well, and that could be a way to get at Planned Parenthood, because at that point, if the simple majority is needed in the Senate, then there's no excuse not to defund Planned Parenthood, given the fact that Republicans have been promising that, working toward that, the fact that they're under investigation by the Department of Justice, and the fact that Congress themselves did an investigation of Planned Parenthood when it came to the trafficking in human baby body parts. So I think if this route is available, that it needs to be taken, and Planned Parenthood needs to be top of the list when it comes to cuts.
Certainly agree with that. And there's a number of other, as the president has said, just wasteful spending items in that bill that deserve similar treatment. But I completely agree, and I think at least there's a consensus among the Republicans in the Congress that the Planned Parenthood item has to be priority number one. And, you know, it's a commitment that we made to the American people. It's the right thing to do. And I think we would I think the base would certainly expect that, and they should.
Well, we're going to continue to track that issue very, very closely. We just got a few minutes left, but I want to transition to something else you and I care very much about, something that you have spent most of your professional life working on. And we've teamed up a number of times to do together, and that's religious freedom. You've got an issue going in your district up in northwest Louisiana, I Stand with Bossier, an event coming up this weekend focused on the religious freedom of students in the schools. Tell us about it.
Well, yeah, thanks, Tony. We're having a landmark community event here in northwest Louisiana this Sunday, the Freedom Student Summit. It's being hosted by many local churches and organizations, and the idea is that we're going to educate, equip, and empower young people to really understand and exercise their right to religious freedom. You know, this event's really timely in this part of the country because there's been some litigation here that's sparked by the ACLU and Americans United for the Separation of Church and State and some other radical leftist groups here in the last couple of months. They sued two of our local school districts simply because students are exercising their rights. And so there's so much misinformation out there about this. You know, Tony, we've been combating it for all of our careers. These leftist groups, they engage in this campaign of fear and intimidation and misinformation, and they have largely convinced a whole generation, now maybe two generations of Americans, that they really don't have religious freedom on a public school campus, and that's the opposite of the truth. So we're trying to get the students together. We're having these large rally events. People like Kirk Cameron are helping us promote it, and I'll be there, and Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry and other leaders to walk the students and their families and community leaders through what the law really says. And we want to encourage kids to go out and exercise that freedom. There's a website if anybody's interested, because I think this model could be duplicated in other states and communities around the country. It's istandwithbossier.com. Bossier spelled B-O-S-S-I-E-R.
All right, we'll certainly put that word out. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to be with you. I'll be in New York City, but I am sending you a video because I believe in what you're doing. And, Mike, as always, great to talk with you. You're doing great work.
You too, my friend. Keep it up. Thank you.
All right, folks, don't go away. The Attorney General of Texas is here next. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org. Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, that website again that Congressman Johnson was talking about, if you live in Louisiana, IStandWithBossier.com. And Bossier, B-O-S-S-I-E-R. We should have that link up at TonyPerkins.com a little later. All right, Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas recently sent a letter, in fact, last week, to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services supporting proposed rules that would assure that the principles of federalism, religious freedom, and the rights of conscience are restored to their proper place in our constitutional system of government. You wouldn't think that would need to be done, that the states would have to be reminding the federal government of what to do, but we're trying to do cleanup after 8 years of Barack Obama. This letter was led by Texas and Arizona, and there were about 17 state attorneys general that signed on. Joining us now is the Texas Attorney General himself, Ken Paxton. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. Hope you're doing well, too.
We're doing quite well. The motivation for this letter supporting these new proposed rules from the Department of Health and Human Services.
Texas, it had funds taken away from it under Title 10, different amounts of grants of money because we wouldn't allow state funds to be used for abortion services. So the Obama administration punished us, along with the Catholic bishops who were trying to be part of a human trafficking program that the federal government offered, and they were also stripped of funding because they wouldn't offer abortion services. So we sent the letter to support what the Trump administration is doing, which is trying to eliminate those roadblocks to what other are otherwise relevant statutes that relate to these abortion services. And there's supposedly not supposed to be any discrimination, but under the Obama administration, there has been.
And how the Trump administration is going about this is that they've proposed these rules. There's been a public comment period where they've allowed the public to respond to the proposed rules. And so as the chief law enforcement officer or enforcement officer defending the laws of Texas, you have spoken into this. So it's a part of the process.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's the way the process is supposed to work. You know, we spoke into the process last time when the Obama administration was trying to strip us of our funding. They obviously didn't pay much attention to what we believe the law was, and we lost significant funding. We're hopeful that all of that will be restored with these new regulations.
So, Barna, that was the Attorney General Paxton, the strong-arming of the previous administration as they were really pushing their agenda when it came to Planned Parenthood, obviously something you know about as well because one of the big investigations into Planned Parenthood was in Texas. I think that investigation is ongoing. But this is, again, restoring a principle of federalism that respects the rights of the states to make these decisions. I mean, it's pretty simple civics, but it seems to have been lost on the last administration.
I think you got it right when you started off talking about this, which was there's already federal law in place, many different statutes, amendments to statutes that are supposed to protect any providers in my state and any other state that don't want to offer abortion drugs, abortion services, and yet somehow the Obama administration ignored the law and stopped us and other entities from getting funds that we were entitled to.
I have to imagine that what we're seeing now, while it's some would say it's a little slow, but I think it's actually moving for the federal government's pace. It's moving pretty rapidly to restore these core principles of federalism. But it has to be a sea change from your vantage point from what we saw in the previous administration.
I wish you could see my face. I'm smiling because everything that we dealt with in the Obama administration was we had to go to court to get any movement at all. They never would respond to us. They wouldn't respond to our letters. They wouldn't respond to our phone calls. And now with the Trump administration, we have access, and we have access to different cabinet secretaries, and there's a lot more cooperation going on, and there's certainly a lot more listening to the state. And it literally is a 180-degree turn for us in Texas, and I think for most states.
Now, in HHS, they've now established a department that actually looks out for religious freedom and rights of conscience, where people have a place to go and file a complaint if they feel they've been aggrieved in that sense. I mean, that again, as you say, that's 180 degrees from what we saw in the previous administration.
Yeah, and I don't know that we've seen that in any administration. You know, I've been shocked at how many religious liberty cases my office has been involved in. It's not certainly something I expected, but we've probably been averaging one or two either every month or every other month. And I don't think that's been typical of most attorney generals across the nation, but we certainly view the First Amendment as, you know, I swore to uphold the Constitution. And so that's certainly something we have tried to make sure, you know, our citizens are protected.
Attorney General Paxton, before I let you go, we're almost up against a break, but I mentioned the Planned Parenthood investigation, DOJ investigating them. Are you pleased and comfortable with what you see happening there as the facts are coming forward?
Yes, I am, and I am pleased. You know, we have our own lawsuits against Planned Parenthood, and they've sued us over our defunding of Planned Parenthood in Texas. And so it's very nice to have the federal government also looking at some of their practices, which we believe are, you know, outside of ethical and medical guidelines.
All right. General Ken Paxton, thank you so much for joining us. And we do appreciate the work you're doing on behalf of the First Freedom down in Texas.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Have a great day.
You too. Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas. And let me tell you, he's led a number of efforts on these issues like this with other state attorneys general. So it's a good guy doing great work down there in the Lone Star State. All right, we still got a lot more to come here on Washington Watch. As I talked about yesterday, a sex ed bill, Planned Parenthood ACLU sex ed bill in Louisiana. Well, it was killed today in committee 8-5. The reason I'm focusing on this is it's popping up all across the country. Parents are not aware because part of the new laws that are being put in place by Planned Parenthood circumvents the parents. Parents don't even know this is going on. Graphic sexual material being taught even down into elementary school. Well, parents are outraged when they find out and they're taking action. Activist mommy Elizabeth Johnston will be here after the break with what parents are doing to push back. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, as we were discussing yesterday, Planned Parenthood, ACLU, and other leftist organizations have been teaming up with liberal lawmakers across the country to introduce model legislation. We kind of blew the cover on this in my home state of Louisiana, where this was introduced, no connection publicly with Planned Parenthood. I mean, what person in their right mind would trust our children to Planned Parenthood? This is the organization under investigation by the federal government for trafficking in human baby body parts. But yet, lawmakers are allowing them to bring in these sex ed programs, which goes all the way down to elementary school, and takes parents out of the loop. Well, parents are finding out what's going on in classrooms. And parents, if you have kids in the public school classroom, I hope you know what's going on. You need to start asking your kids. This is coming in the form of, quote-unquote, anti-bullying in some cases. I mean, whatever they have to do, whatever deception they need, they will use to get into the classroom and to get into your kids' minds. Well, parents have discovered what's going on. The pornographic sex ed curriculum that's being taught in these schools, and parents have had enough. And they're organizing the sex ed sit-out Monday, April the 23rd. Now, if you have kids in the public schools, I encourage you to listen up as I bring in one of the organizers who is helping make this happen. She's been on the program before. Activist mommy Elizabeth Johnston. Elizabeth, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thank you so much. It's an honor.
Well, I've been tracking what you have been doing as you have been exposing the Human Rights Campaign, Planned Parenthood, and the graphic nature, which is really sexual indoctrination that's taking place mm-hmm. of these kids. And you've tapped into something where parents are, as they find out, they're outraged by this.
Absolutely. The vast majority of parents do not want schools teaching their children how to engage in, oral and anal sex, and they certainly don't consider that to be abstinence teaching. And would you believe that groups like, as you mentioned, special interest groups like the human rights campaign, radical leftist LGBT organization, and Planned Parenthood are working in concert together and sneaking into the schools, claiming to be abstinence only, Tony. And do you know what they consider abstinence only to be? Teaching kids how to masturbate one another and anal and oral sex. Not to mention, the human rights campaign, of course, is encouraging kids to question their gender through anti-bullying programming, as you already mentioned. And parents do not know this is taking place. They are very sneaky with the language. They change the names of the programs, Tony, so that the parents can't trace the programs. There's so many different names to the programs, and this is outrageous, and we are not going to stand for it, and our kids' innocence is not for sale.
Elizabeth, I know you are absolutely right, because I watched this unfold. Again, I mentioned earlier, you heard me talk about Louisiana, where State Representative Pat Smith introduced a piece of legislation which was bad on its face. I mean, I saw it and I was opposed to it and warned our constituents in Louisiana. But then someone showed me a comparison between her bill and the model legislation of Planned Parenthood and their and ACLU. And when I began, it was almost word for word, but they were very specific about using terms that would not alert anyone to what was taking place. And they also, as you pointed out, they cut out the parents in the process, where parents have to opt their kids out of something they're not even sure what it is, so they don't know what to opt them out of.
Exactly. Here's what happens. Funding is dangled in front of the schools by these special interest groups to push this propaganda, contingent upon using their curriculum. There's no transparency with the parents and downright deception being employed on the part of school administrators. Parents cannot opt their kids out of these sex ed and anti-bullying programs when they don't even know that they exist in the first place. And they're being rolled out, Tony, across the entire curriculum. It's not like it's just a sex ed course. We're seeing these topics being discussed inside the history curriculum and the science and the math, for crying out loud. They're talking about kids going to gay bars in word problems in math. And so they're rolling it out, and they call that comprehensive sex education. And so there's nothing for the parents to opt out of. It's not like you can say, okay, what time is sex ed class? I'll come and pick my child up, and they won't be involved in sex ed. You can't opt out when it's rolled across the curriculum. And so as parents, I mean, I'm a homeschool mom, and I've got my kids protected from this. But I feel so sorry for these parents who are not able to homeschool, who do have their kids in the public school setting, and they feel helpless to stop this. And so this is why we're doing Sex Ed Sit Out protests on April 23rd.
Elizabeth, we're up against a break. Can you stick around for a couple minutes and come back? I want to finish our conversation. Okay. Activist Mommy is on the case here. And she's going to come back, and we're going to continue our conversation about what's coming up April the 23rd, where parents across the country that have kids in the public schools are having a sex ed sit out to draw awareness to what's happening in the classrooms of America. We're going to finish that conversation with Elizabeth on the other side of the break. Don't go away.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique, not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life.
Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most: faith, family, freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or at TonyPerkins.com.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Glad you're with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. My guest, Elizabeth Johnson, activist mommy, talking about an event coming up April 23rd, Sex Ed Sit Out. In fact, that's the website, sexedsitout.com. Elizabeth, let me just underscore what you talked about, the deception, okay? I want our listeners to hear this. I'm actually reading from the Advocates for Youth, ACLU, Planned Parenthood, Comprehensive Sex Education Model Legislation. This is what they're handing out to legislators. This, I'm just going to read from it. This model comprehensive sex education legislation is drafted to garner the support and partnership of key constituencies, including parents, educators, and health professionals. It goes on to say, although this bill refers to sex education, you may use other terminology. Example, sexuality education, health education, or family life education to be consistent with existing state policy terminology or, listen to this, for strategic purposes or in alignment with the polling that has been done in various areas of the country about which terminology resonates best. It goes on to talk about abstinence. This is what it says with in terms of abstinence. In some communities, advocates may feel they need to use the term, the abstinence terminology, in order to build consensus. So they want to – it's basically a Trojan horse is what
deceit.
They're building legislation. That's right. It's deceit.
They're deceiving the parents because they know that the taxpayers would never support bringing in pornographic sex ed and knowing about it. And so they sneak it in without us knowing about it.
So you have tapped into something. Parents, when they find out, and unfortunately parents are not as engaged in what their children are being taught as I wish they were and they should be. And so this stuff is being – their kids' minds are being filled with this pornographic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when that's exposed, when the curtain is pulled back and they actually realize that they're responding. And so tell us about what's going to happen on April the 23rd.
Absolutely. It's amazing to watch what God is doing. We have no resources. We are literally a few moms who have a little bit of courage and a lot of passion. And we started with focusing on one city. We were going to launch this in Charlotte, North Carolina, because we knew we had no resources and we couldn't handle much more than that. And I will have you know that this movement has gone global. We are in Australia and in Canada, and we are doing press events in at least four major cities: Bloomington, Indiana, the home of the monster Alfred Kinsey, who's responsible for a lot of this, Charlotte, North Carolina, Sacramento, California, and Austin, Texas, where they have a very strong movement of parents that are fighting graphic sex ed. And so it's just amazing to watch. And what we're asking people to do, we have on our website, please go to sexedsitout.com. And on sexedsitout.com, you'll get all the resources you need. We have graphics for signs. We will be providing each of the protesters, protest groups with signs as well. We have a letter to the principals, where you can print the letter out and sign it and explain to your principal why you were pulling your child out on the 23rd. And we want to hear all of the letters, all of the emails coming in about principals giving you a hard time about this when the principals were pushing the anti-gun march for our lives. And
that's a very interesting point, Elizabeth. I happened to be in California the day of that march. I had been there for a couple of days for some speaking events, and I was staying in a hotel in which the Teachers Federation in California was staying, supposedly having their annual meeting or something. But they all took to the march with their anti-gun T-shirts, you know, protect children, not guns. And I actually thought about this. I said, well, what would happen if there were a march for life, a walkout for something else? What would these educators who, many of them left-leaning, actually using the students to advance their own political agenda, how would they respond?
Right. And this is a sit-out everyone can support and that we should be supporting. If you are not a rabid, foaming-at-the-mouth leftist liberal who wants to pervert the minds of children, everyone should be able to support this sit-out. And this is parent-led, not women's march-led, not George Soros-led. This is parent-led, and this is saying we're the taxpayers, we're the parents. You don't own our children, and you're not allowed to rape the minds of our children with this pornographic material. We've got to do it. We've got to rise up and take our kids back. And so on the 23rd, we're asking you to print out the principal letter from sexedsitout.com. Pull your child from school that day. If you live anywhere near one of the protest events that we have listed on our website, please load your car up with friends and family and attend the protest event, and let's be loud and let's show these school boards and these administrators that are deceiving us and sneaking this stuff in just so that they can get school funding. Hands off our kids. Enough is enough.
So, Elizabeth, they would have the letter. They would give that to the school authorities in advance, saying, I'm pulling my kids out for this sex ed sit-out. So they would know in advance. And so you're encouraging those parents, based upon what response they get from the school officials, to let you know. Because I do think it's going to be very, very instructive to see if the school authorities treat this differently than the kids who are walking out without necessarily parental authority, walking out, you know, in protest over the Second Amendment.
Exactly. And one of my friends actually went to her superintendent in Indiana and said, you are promoting the March for Our Lives, the anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment March for Our Lives. Would you do the same if it was a march against abortion, a pro-life march during school hours? And he said, absolutely not. I wouldn't allow that. She exposed him in one Facebook post, and he called her by 12 noon that day and said, okay, I'm not gonna support the March for Our Lives. And she's one of our leaders. And so, you know, it's amazing the power that mama bears have. And that's really a lot of my following is mama bears. And we're not going to put up with this anymore. We're going to expose these radicals, these social Marxists that are trying to indoctrinate our kids.
Well, Mama Bear, I want you to come back on here as we're leading up to this event. I want to get you on periodically here to give us an update on how this is going, because we definitely want to help promote what you're doing, because I think it's absolutely spot on and needs to be
done.
Thank
you so much. Thank you so
Elizabeth,
much for giving this movement a voice, and I'd love to come back.
All right. Well, we definitely will. We're going to get at least weekly updates on this. And I'm very, very interested to see the response of educators and how they treat this differently. And we will we'll jump on that, because if they're going to allow kids to walk out of school to protest the Second Amendment, they certainly should allow parents to pull kids out to protest pornography that's being masqueraded as sex education in the classrooms.
Amen.
Elizabeth Johnson, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for what you're doing, and we appreciate you.
You too, Tony. God bless.
All right. All right. I don't have this up yet on my website, but we will. It is sexedsitout.com. And I want to encourage you to especially if you have kids in the public schools, you need to number one, you need to have a conversation with your kids. And look, this, I know historically we, you know, sex ed has, in most places, has been taught in high school or, you know, some variety thereof. Abstinence, it's gotten down in the middle school. Planned Parenthood and ACLU, they want this, you know, into the elementary schools. And not an abstinence message, but it's as she pointed out, you've got the Human Rights Campaign involved in this as well, sometimes under the guise of anti-bullying, which is really promoting and teaching homosexuality. Do you know what is being taught in your child's classroom? You have a right to know. You have a right to know. You should go ask. Ask your first, start with your kids. Hey, has anybody talked to you about this kind of stuff? And I would definitely encourage you to join this movement, Sex Ed Sit Out, and draw national attention to what is happening. Planned Parenthood is using deception. Now, look, this is an organization. In fact, yesterday, Cecile Richards tweeted out, let's see if I've got this. I have it somewhere in front of me. She had a picture of her and her dog, and she tweeted out, adopt, not shop. I think that's what it said. Let me find it here. Yes, adopt, don't shop, talking about adopting animals. I'm all for adopting animals. In fact, I pick up most of my dogs have been strays that I have found. So I'm all for that. But the irony here of an organization that makes its living, I mean, $1.4 billion in revenue coming primarily from abortions. Well, I should say half of it, $700,000. That's all they made on abortion. And she's talking about adopting animals. I mean, consider this. For every 83 abortions that Planned Parenthood did, you know how many adoptions they did? Or referred for adoption, I should say. They don't do adoptions. One adoption referral for every 83 abortions. This is the same organization that's under investigation by the federal government for violating the law in trafficking in human baby body parts. And we want to trust them with teaching our children sex education? I mean, just connect the dots there. Their model, where they make their money, where they build their organization, which they parlay into political support for candidates who support their viewpoints, which, by the way, they're being investigated for as well, misuse of political funding. But their model is that they make money off of abortions. So what do you think their sex ed programs might lead to? Do they really want to end the need for abortion? I mean, if they did, they would promote abstinence only, which is the only way, 100% certainty, that you won't A, get pregnant, B, you won't have a sexually transmitted disease, and C, you won't have the emotional ties that take place when people get entangled physically, sexually, outside of marriage, which leads to depression and even cases of suicide. Folks, if you don't do it, who will? If you don't stand up and defend your children, protect your children, who will? It's not someone else's business to protect your children. I can help. I mean, I'm going to give you all the information I can do, but ultimately it's not my responsibility to protect your children. It's yours. It's no one else's responsibility to protect my children. And I'm thankful for mama bears that Elizabeth was talking about. Moms understand these things. And moms, I encourage you to connect with this and be a part of this. SexEdSitOut.com. Find out how you can – if there's not one of these protest organized initiatives in your community, organize one. Go to the website. Get the information. She said it's turnkey. They'll give you everything you need. You can start one. Doesn't matter if you got a dozen parents, two dozen, a thousand. Does not matter. But get the letter. Let your school administrators know that your kids are not going to be in school on April the 23rd. That you are sitting out to protest the pornographic sex education that's taking place in many of our schools across America with Planned Parenthood and ACLU's fingerprints all over it. It's time to wake up, time to take a stand, time to put an end to this. And by the way, that ties right back into our top topic today, and that is the omnibus funding bill that gives nearly a $500 million in tax dollars combined between federal and state to Planned Parenthood, that turns around and uses that to try to get into our schools to push this anti-parent agenda. Because they're very clear in this model legislation that they want to go around the parents, where many states like Louisiana require school boards to have parental boards or parental committees to review the material that's going to be taught on sex ed, completely cuts them out and tries to circumvent the parents whose responsibility it is to protect the children. Folks, if this doesn't get you upset, I don't know what would. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right, folks, out of time for today. But Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. I know some on the left cringe at that thought, but I'm all smiles. Can't wait to get back. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.